From our newsroom in London, this is The Standard. This edition is a preview of the latest episode of Brave New World, a podcast where Evgeny Lebedev speaks to leading experts about the latest trends in modern medicine and how to maximise health and longevity. To hear the whole interview and listen to previous episodes, search Brave New World Evening Standard on your podcast provider.
Welcome back to Brave New World, where today I will be speaking to an international leader in the study of psychedelics, Dr. Bill Richards. He's had a private practice in psychotherapy since 1976, starting out at the height of the war on drugs. The 1977 program he was working on at Spring Grove Hospital in Maryland, which involved psychedelics, was shut down by the US government. The research lay dormant for nearly 20 years, with his first published findings in the field coming out in 1996. Today, he's an academic at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, where in 2016, he led a study that showed impressive results in the use of psilocybin for the treatment of cancer patients experiencing anxiety and depression. Bill is the author of Sacred Knowledge, Psychedelics and Religious Experiences, which has been translated into 9 languages, and the 10th translation into Spanish is coming out in May. The book has been lauded the most comprehensive overview of the use of psychedelics and psychotherapy and of transformative powers of mystical experiences. And that is what we're going to be speaking about with Bill today. Now, Bill specializes in psychology of religion and sees the sacred molecules in compounds like psilocybin as key to what is already in the brain. To him, alternative states of consciousness can be triggered in ways that don't involve a substance like magic mushrooms. Rather, the magic mushrooms help to unlock something already there and which mystics are able to access independently.
I'm very excited to talk to you, Bill, because you're a rare breed in this field of someone who straddles both the world of the scientific and also the spiritual, which usually is either one or the other.
I like to think that this is the frontiers of science are bumping into what we call the spiritual. And it's both and instead of either or. Well, actually, you know, I grew up with a scientific father who taught chemistry and physics, geology, and a rather pious mother. And so kind of the science and religion have always kind of been in my blood, I think. The frontiers of the psychedelic world are at the frontiers of language and human cognition. And my old favorite illustration is kind of the caveman being brought into modern Manhattan, you know, and he sees skyscrapers and jet planes, and then he's zapped back to his cave, and his wife says, "Gorg, what did you experience?" And all he can say is it was big, it was loud, it was impressive. But I suspect he'd have some sense that there was an order to it, that perhaps some future generation could articulate, you know, that it wasn't just pure chaos. And I think these mystical transcendental states of consciousness, whatever we want to call them, are kind of like that. They're beyond our categories of thinking of time and space and substance. And sometimes it seems more the realm of philosophy than science, but it's also the frontier of science.
I'm actually curious to understand it a bit more, and I think our listeners, perhaps who some of them may not be familiar at all with your vision, and some may be somewhat familiar, but please do explain how you see everything.
Yeah, I think the fundamental principle that the world is trying to come to terms with is that we are more than our everyday egos or personalities. My Bill, your Evgeny, you know?
Yes.
And we tend to think that that's all we are. And we're these kind of isolated people dancing through the world. And the psychedelics open up these other states of consciousness that most of us didn't even know were there. It's like they've been within us all the time and we never knew they were there, you know? And first they open up, and if the dosage is relatively low, they often trigger memories from childhood and a kind of psychodynamic material. Yes. You know, of working through grief and guilt and traumas and interpersonal relationships. And that's the realm of conventional psychotherapy. Yeah,
but at very fast speed, right?
Yeah. It's intense. It's concentrated psychotherapy if it's done well.
Because it'll take you a long, long time to get there through traditional psychotherapy.
That's right. But then there's this realm beyond that, if you will, of visions of gods and goddesses and ancient civilizations and precious gemstones and who knows what. And beyond that, there's this unitive consciousness, a world permeated by love and beauty where all the opposites seem to be reconciled. And that's pretty mind-blowing, you know. It's not what we usually think of when we think of who we are. And there's real frontiers of knowledge that these psychedelic drugs, substances, sacraments, medicines, whatever you want to call them, have profound relevance, not only for medical treatment, treating depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, so on, but also for education and for religion. This is the experiential dimension at the origin of most of the world religions. And boy, it's not only for medical people, it's for religious scholars too.
What does it all mean? I mean, the medical part, the treatment part, is very easily understandable, at least explainable, if not necessarily yet achievable on a big scale, but some incredible breakthroughs in the last, well, you know, in the first stages of research in the 60s and 70s, and then lately in the last two decades. But the other part is very interesting, exciting, but quite difficult to grasp, I think. I guess, particularly for people who haven't experienced it. Well, I guess my twofold question, why do you think, what does it all mean? And I know you've said already that it's frontiers and more philosophical, but what does it mean to you, and why is it important?
Lots of answers to that. Let me jump in. You know, one of the major foci of my life at this time is the application of the psychedelic therapy to palliative care.
Yes.
People who are dealing with the end of their lives, often cancer patients or whatever. And when these people are had by these transcendental states of consciousness, one thing they often report is loss of a fear of death, which is pretty profound. And what is so fascinating is that these people don't become suicidal. There's no urge to speed up the death, but rather the present moment seems to open up, unfold, and they start to enjoy people instead of hiding in their bedrooms preoccupied with pain. They'll say, oh, the pain is still there, but it doesn't bother me like it used to, you know? And they become engaged and they live until they die.
Yes.
And they realize it's not only those who have terminal cancer who are mortal, but most of us are mortal. Maybe even you and me, you know? Similarly, so many people are trapped in addictions and depression and anxiety, low self-worth, et cetera. And if these substances are made available wisely, legally, intelligently, with good preparation, I think they can awaken the world really to a deeper sense of what is normal.
Mm.
And maybe a more wise, compassionate civilization, if that doesn't sound too grandiose. These drugs, Evgeny, have been around probably since the dawn of civilization, you know? And they emerge in cultures and then they get suppressed, and they emerge and they get suppressed, very much like mushrooms growing. See them and then you don't, you know?
Yes.
Like in ancient Greece, they stayed above ground for several hundred years. There are cultures today, especially in South and Central America, where they're still very alive and responsibly used, integrated into the culture and the religions, you know? But for most of us, certainly in the United States, in the UK, and much of the Western world, we've lost touch with them and with the knowledge that they potentially can give us.
I asked Bill why he feels it is so difficult for psychedelic research to break through despite the evidence to show its astonishing benefits.
Yeah, why the taboo? Alan Watts said it was the taboo against knowing who you are.
Right.
Don't wake up. The religious traditions, if you think of enlightenment, more and more light, it's a process of waking up. Many people who are pursuing meditative disciplines these days are kind of tapping into a broader awareness, a broader consciousness. Like it's there waiting to be discovered. How we go about it is incredibly important. And I don't think there's anything that happens with psychedelics that doesn't also happen spontaneously and with other approaches. You know, some people prefer sensory isolation or flooding or get involved in creative activities, or sometimes good agnostics have these revelatory experiences in the middle of the night and they don't know where they come from. Mm-hmm. Maslow called them peak experiences, P-E-A-K, you know, but all of a sudden there it is. My gosh, you can't believe what happened last night. And supposedly these experiences happen spontaneously in many people who are highly creative, like Albert Einstein and Eleanor Roosevelt, for example, reported states like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they never, as far as we know, they never took psychedelics. They didn't need to. Abraham Maslow himself never took psychedelics. And now that term, mystical consciousness, is becoming a scientific term. You can find it in the Journal of Nervous and Mental Disease, in the Journal of Psychopharmacology, and so mm-hmm. on. It's not something that is characterized by turbans and crystal balls.
Do you believe that it can be achieved through brain chemistry without the being induced by psychedelics? Do you believe that the mystics, the religious mystics in history, were not taking psychedelics, or some of them perhaps were not?
Yeah, the supposedly, you know, I'm not a biochemist, but I am informed that our bodies naturally produce methyltryptamine, usually in very small quantities. So actually, we're all in violation of federal law by being human.
In many ways, opiates or cannabinoids. And
that's right. It's part of normal human functioning. And sufficient intensity dosage of those psychedelic mind manifesting chemicals triggers awareness of these other states of consciousness. And they happen in all kinds of people. Many people never talk about them because they're afraid that they're going crazy or people will think they're schizophrenic or something. And yet they may be deeply treasured, meaningful experiences that kind of inform their values and their relationships and their deep spiritual identities, a sense of being safe in the world, ultimately, you know.
Use of these substances in treating conditions such as PTSD, depression, anxiety. But why do you think it's important, or is it important for someone to experience the mystical experience?
Yeah. Here's one way to approach it. Our Hindu friends have this wonderful concept of the bejeweled net of Indra. Mm-hmm. Okay? We call it the brotherhood of man or the unity of humankind or whatever. But it's this idea that if you go deep enough within the human mind, you come to a unity where we're all interrelated. Mm-hmm. Peace on earth, goodwill towards men. We're all brothers and sisters, whether we like it or not.
This is Carl Jung's theory also.
Deep within the collective unconscious, we're all interconnected. Now, if you take, say, the typical person who's struggling with an addiction, whether to alcohol or heroin or nicotine, whatever, and he or she may have a very low sense of self-worth. You know, I failed, my marriage has collapsed, I've lost my job, I can't control my desire. We would say that person has lost contact, forgotten, if they ever knew, that they are really, in the depths of their mind, part of humanity. They're connected. And so in the forgetting, they're really living a delusion. Okay, they think they're isolated and helpless and hopeless. Yeah, but if a person like that, with the help of psilocybin, perhaps, awakens to one of these mystical types of experience, there's an intuitive knowledge of interconnectedness, related inner resources. And so the person, and self-worth. So the person will say afterwards, gee, of course I can get control over my addiction. You know, I've got all these inner resources. I'm not isolated and alone as I thought I was. Okay. And that's a very powerful piece of the healing process.
Yes.
Or the depressed person who feels isolated, alone, failure, lost, taps into all these inner resources, and all of a sudden the lights come on.
Yes. Do you think it's important for somebody who doesn't on the surface have anything that they may think is a problem of any psychological kind?
Yeah, my friend Bob Jesse talks about using psychedelics for the betterment of well people. That you don't have to have a DSM diagnosis necessarily to benefit from their use. There have been studies of using them to facilitate creativity.
Well, the way you described it, it would definitely make the world a better place if people feel this connectivity, which inevitably most people don't feel.
Yeah, well, who knows what they feel? They may have some knowledge we could benefit from, some of them.
That was a preview of Brave New World. You can hear the whole show and listen to previous episodes by searching Brave New World Evening Standard in your podcast provider.